Boker Tov. Shalom Alechem. So we have a reading, page 126, section 10, 11. Reading 1 Kings 21, verses 1 through 7. So you've been able to work your way through that this last week, and we're ready to tackle it. Okay, Melody, you want to start us? Good. Vayehi achar hadavarim ha'ele kerem haya lenavot ha'yizraeli asher b'yizrael etzel hekal achav melech shomron. Okay, can you translate that? Good. Vayehi achar hadavarim ha'ele, after these things, or and it happened after these things. Kerem is a vineyard. Hayah le means can be belonging to, so we would call that a lamed of possession on Navot. There was a vineyard belonging to Naboth. Hayizraeli, the Jezreelite. That E ending on the end of that, we have a place name or the name of a person, is what usually gets translated into English as an ite. You know, the Canaanite, the Jebusites, the Amorites, and all. This is the Jezreelite. It's what we call a gentilic ending, designates a group of people. Asher b'Yisrael, who was in Jezreel. So Jezreel is up in the north of Israel, not too far from Megiddo. Etzel, we're told there, is beside, or close to, or near. Hekal is the palace or temple of Ahab, the king of Shomron. Shomron is what we in English know as Samaria, the capital of the northern kingdom. Well, Melech could be either absolute or construct. It'd be the same form. If you take it as absolute, then you don't know what to do with the Shomron. So context requires you to take it as being construct, take it as being king of, instead of simply king. Otherwise, you have two nouns in a row with no syntactical relationship. Well, most of these things happen because they get, first of all, translated into Greek. And Greek doesn't have a sh sound, so they have to use a single, just an S. So it became Samaria, and then they get translated into Latin, and then finally into English. So our word Samaria, well, actually it stayed pretty much the constant from Greek to Latin to English. But for pretty much any place name, by the time it gets into English, that's its third translation it's made. Or third transliteration. Particularly making that transition from a Semitic language into an Indo-European language, which doesn't have the same phonemes, is where you tend to get changes made. And things like, any place name with an ion in it, there's nothing at all like that in Greek. There you get differences. Right, so yes, sackcloth is just a transliteration from Hebrew. Okay, verse 2, Joyce. Good. Vayidaber Achav El Navot Lemor. Tana li et karmacha. Vihi li lagan yarak kihu karov etzel beti. Vetana lacha. Tachtav, kerem tov mimenu, im tov be'enecha, etana laka kesef mechir ze. So the first bit is straightforward. Vayedaber Achav el Navot lemor. Then Ahab said to Naboth, open quotation marks, Tana li et karmacha, give me, your vineyard, vihi li lagan yarak, So here again we have this hayahlu, to become or to be or to here to belong. We might translate vihili, so it might be to me. So it might be to me or for me. Lagan, for a garden. Yarak, a vegetable garden. So that first lamed on the li will be the possession that it might be for me. And then the second lamed on front of gan will be to become. So with haya le can be to become there. So that it might become for me a vegetable garden. Kihu karov etzel beti. Because, so that's ki, because hu, that's a pronoun referring back to the kerem, it. So because it, and it's masculine because kerem is masculine. Karov, we've already had etzel, beside or close to, and karov means near. So you put the two of those together and probably take it as because it's right beside beti, my house or my palace. The etana lecha, and I will give to you. So notice that etana, that's a cohortative. Remember we learned those last week. It's got that cohortative hey ending on it. I will give to you tachtav, in its place. Tachat is under or instead of, with a third masculine singular suffix. I will give to you instead of it a kerem, a vineyard, tov mimenu. The mimenu, we call that that from it or than it. Here it's what we call a comparative min, better than it. So I think we've seen these comparatives before. This is how you'd say good than good from it, i.e. better from it, better than it. So I will give to you a vineyard in its place, a vineyard better than it. Little pause. Im tov be'enecha, if good in your eyes. Etna lecha, I will let me give to you. If it is, and here he's really expressing an alternative, if it is good in your eyes, I will give to you kesef, silver, or more generally money. Mechir ze. Mechir is price, or the purchase money. Ze, this. I will give, let me give to you silver or money for the price of it. In your eyes. So I think we had that last week as well. Right, so it's usually either tov be'enecha, good in your eyes, or ra'ah be'enecha, evil in your eyes. Okay. Marilyn? Okay. Vayomer navot el achav chalila li me adonai metiti et nachalat avotai lach. Good. Vayomer Navot el Achav, then Naboth said to Ahab, Chalila li, Dobson tells us to take that as may the Lord forbid me. Chalal is means to defile. So this is calling this is a strong oath, calling God's judgment upon yourself if you do something otherwise. May the Lord forbid me, metiti, and this is a form of the verb natan. It's lost the first nun and the last nun, and we're just left with a tav with a dagesh, and then a min on the front, and this is an infinitive, and we're going to learn about infinitives in lesson 12. The min goes with the chalila li, You can always think of it as what you're trying to separate yourself from my giving. What the infinitive does in this construct is it turns the verb into a noun. So what we would translate actually as a gerund, the giving. From my giving, et nachalat avotai, the inheritance of my fathers to you. Nachala, inheritance here as a construct, nachalat avotai. So again, nachalat is in construct. So if it was just nachala, the noun ends in a kamatz hey, it's a feminine singular noun, and that would be inheritance. With the at ending, that's a feminine singular construct, which is inheritance of. Okay, so remember, construct, the masculine singular and feminine plural tend to be the same. Masculine plural changes from im to a, and feminine singular changes from a to at. Okay, good. Vayavo Achav El Beito Sar V'Za'ef Al Hadavar Asher Deber Eliv Navot HaYisraeli Vayomer Lo Etein Lecha Et Nachalat Avotai Vayishkav Al Mitato Vayasev Et Panaiv Velo Achal Lachem. Right, so Vayavo Achav El Beito. Then Ahab entered into his house. Sar V'Za'ef, sullen and angry. Al Hadavar, on account of the matter or the word. Asher Deber Eliv Navot HaYisraeli, which Naboth the Jezreelite had said to him, Vayomer, and he said, so this is now recounting what it is that Naboth said to him, Lo etain lecha, I will not give to you, et nachalat avotai, the inheritance of my fathers. End of quote. Vayishkav al mitato, then he lay down, that is Ahab, upon his couch, Vayasev et panaiv, and he turned his face, imagine turning his face to the wall. Velo achal lachem, and he did not eat food. Good. Avotai.
Okay, I got the bowl.
The end of verse 3, avotai. The bait is followed by just a holom. And then the tav has a patach under it. Whereas now in verse 4, the bait is followed by a holom vav. So the vav there being used as a vowel. And then a kametz under the tav instead of a patach. And both meaning the same thing. It's just variants in the spelling. Unfortunately, the way that grammarians refer to them is that they would say that the second one, avotai, having that holom vav, it is spelt, it's a full spelling. And the other one, avotai, with a holom, is, unfortunately, they call it a defective spelling. There's nothing defective about it at all. It's just, it's a short spelling. And the avotai would have, the first one would be the way that it was originally spelt, and then over time, more and more of these vavs and yods and hays got added in to function as vowels. Okay. Vatavo eliv Isabel ishto vatadaber eliv mahze ruchacha sara v'enecha Ochel lachem. Vatavo eliv Isabel ishto. Then Isabel is Jezebel. Ishto, his wife, came to him. So then Jezebel, his wife, came to him, Vatidaber Eliv, and she said to him, Mahze, what is this? Ruchacha, Sarah, your spirit, Sarah, sullen. So what's this, your spirit, sullen? We would have to render it something. Why is your spirit sullen like this, or something like that? Sarah is now feminine. Previously it was Sar, now it's Sarah, because Ruach, spirit, is feminine. Ve'enecha, and there is not to you. Remember Ein, there is not, that we had a couple of weeks ago. Ochel, this might be able to figure out, has something to do with eating. The end of the previous verse we had Achal. Ochel is a participle. There is not to you eating bread or food. So we would then translate that, and you do not eat food. Good. Vayedaber Elea ki adaber el navot hayizraeli fa omar lo tana li et karmacha bekesef o im chafetz ata etana lacha karam tachtaiv vayomer lo etain lacha et karmi. Good. Vayedaber Elea, and he said to her, open quotation marks, ki adaber el navot ha-Yisraeli, because I said to Naboth the Jezreelite, or because I spoke to Naboth the Jezreelite, va-omar lo, and said to him, tana li et karmacha, give to me your vineyard, bekesef, for silver. And the bait there can express the price of something. So we call it the bait of price. So you'll gradually learn that these prepositions have a wide range of meanings. And this is where you sort of consult a grammar book and learn all the many uses of bait and lamed. And if you're taking this at school and on a test, you'd have to identify what sort of bait is that. And of course, they'd all have technical names. You don't really need to know that. You just need to be able to recognize, oh yes, that's a bait. That expresses something to do with price. So give me your vineyard for the price of money. Or, im chafetz ata, if you are willing, or if you like, etana lacha, let me give to you. So etana, another cohortative, let me give to you kerem, a vineyard tachtav, in place of it, in its place. Vayomer, and he said, lo etain lacha et karmi, I will not give to you my vineyard. And he conveniently leaves out why he will not give his vineyard.
Right.
Right. He's suggesting Jezebel that Naboth is being completely unreasonable.
Right.
And you could only sell your property if you were in desperate straits and you were basically poor and you owed debts, and then you could sell it. But then after 50 years, well, after a certain amount of time in the year of Jubilee, it would go back to its original owner. And notice that in here we're constantly told that Naboth is the Jezreelite. So he's never simply called Naboth. He's always... Now, we could have been told that just the first time, and then we didn't need to be told that every other time. We're constantly being reminded, no, he's from Jezreel. This is his home. This is his country. It's constantly... Mm-hmm. We're never allowed to forget that. Mm-hmm. And hence, this is his ancestral land. He can't sell it. Yeah, the narrator is driving that home to us. The ata goes with a chafetz. Im chafetz ata, if you are willing. Chafetz there, an adjective. Atta, second masculine, singular pronoun. Okay. Finally, 7, Joyce. Good. Vatomer elive, Isabel, ishto. Ata, ata, ta'ase, malucha, al Yisrael. Kum, echol lechem, vayetav, lebecha, ani etain lecha et kerem navot ha-Yisraeli. Good. Vatomer elive, Isabel ishto. Then Jezebel, his wife, said to him, Ata, ata, you now, ta'ase, make or do, Malucha al Yisrael, make the rule over Israel. So sort of what she's saying is exercise your rule over Israel. I act as a king, not as a spoilt brat who's sullen and angry and turned your face to the wall. Exercise, so we gotta, you now exercise your kingship over Israel. Kum echol, arise, eat food, vayetav lebecha, and your heart will be cheerful, will be good. Yatav, from yatav, so we're given that right at the bottom line of 126. Yatav, he is good, he is cheerful. And we then could probably take the vayetav on the conjunction verb there is so that your heart will be good, will be cheerful. Arise, eat food, so that your heart will be cheerful. Ani etain laka. Now the ani there, that's first singular pronoun, I. And she didn't need to say that. Just saying etain contains that I. If it was just etain laka, I will give to you. So she's added the ani for emphasis. I myself will give you et kerem navot ha-Yisraeli, the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite. So when she says to him, ata, ata, so the first ata is you, the second ata is now. And notice that to him she's saying, ata, as for you, now exercise your kingship over Israel. Arise, eat food, so your heart will be cheerful. And then it's as if she's now points her finger at herself and says, Ani, and as for me, I'll give you the vineyard. Ta'ase. So the tav on the front is second person. Remember that we have second person and the hey on the end is just part of the verb. It's a third hey verb, asa. So
the ta is
second person. And in this case, then, second masculine singular. Okay. His wife. So it's from Isha. Isha is woman or wife. And the construct of Isha is Eshet. Then you add a pronominal suffix on the end, O, his. And the one of the vowels shortens up. Instead of, so it'd be Eshet plus O. And instead of being Esheto, it's Ishto. It shortens up as it gets multisyllabic. And in due course, Jezebel does indeed get vineyard for Ahab through nefarious means. Okay, let's turn to the top of page 127, and we're going to learn about accents and punctuation marks. So keep your text. Now, I gave you 2 copies of the text of 1 Kings 21. One was just the pointed text, so that's the consonants with the vowels. And the other was the cantillated text, which is the consonants, the vowels, and the cantillation symbols or the accent symbols. So I don't know which of those two you are working off of, but we'll turn our attention to the cantillated version. The Masoretic scribes, these were operating 600 to 900, 700 to 900, 1000 AD, added into the consonants, both vowels to indicate how to read it, and accent marks. And every word carries an accent mark or cantillation symbol. And there are lots of them, but only a few of them do we need to pay attention to. I've also given, if you want to pass that around to John, a table of accents. And there are a lot of them, but only for a few of them do you need to pay any attention. So we read at the top of page 127, note also these punctuation marks which show how the Masoretes considered words should be grouped and verses divided. In the last word of each verse, you'll find a mark, so a little vertical line, under the first or the only consonant of the accented syllable. The accent mark always goes with the accented syllable. So, if we look at the end of verse 1, right, so you see a vertical line under the resh of Shomron. You see that? That is called a saluk. The syllable, then we read a little further on, this punctuation mark or accent is called saluk. It is always followed by, and then by that colon, which marks the end of the verse, which is called a sof pasuk. So the sof pasuk is the two colons, they're actually two little diamonds, one above the other, that mark the end of verse, and the saluk accents the syllable that is accented, which generally is the last syllable of the word. So Shomron, Ron is the accented syllable. Okay, so that's the most important accent in the verse. It's always on the last word. The syllable that has the punctuation mark is often lengthened or a little altered. And we see this at the end of some of the other verses. So at the end of verse 3, we're running et nachalat avotai lach. Now lach, on its, as such, we've learned as to you, feminine singular, and to you, masculine singular, would be lacha. But here, at the end of the verse, we have what we call a pausal form, and the vowel lengthens, the accented vowel lengthens from lacha to lach. So that's what Dobson is pointing out there. The syllable that has a punctuation mark is often lengthened or a little altered. So the last word of 21.3 is lacha, not. It's not lacha, but lach. And we call that a pausal form. And we do exactly the same thing in English. As we get to the end of a sentence, we draw out, typically on our last word, we draw out the vowels. We lengthen the vowels. The same thing has happened at the end of verse 4, where we would normally have lechem, but now it's lengthened, and the pausal form is lachem. And in this case, the saluk is under the second last syllable, because lechem is a sigillate noun. Remember I said that where we have two sigils, that the accent falls on the second last syllable. And I think there's a glossary entry for those, for sigillate nouns. Yes, on page 345. That's the major punctuation mark that marks the end of the verse. The next most important punctuation mark divides a verse into two parts, and it's that upward-pointing little arrow that's underneath a word. See that little caret there in point number 2? So in verse 1, it's under B'Yisrael, towards the end of the first line. So you see that? So why don't you sort of mark up this text and just put after that word, put a vertical slash or something, That divides the verse into two halves. In verse 2, it's after memenu. So this is second word in on the fourth line down. That's our midway. Now in that case, you notice that the first half of the verse is a lot longer than the second half of the verse. The first half of the verse is probably three times as long as the second half in that case. And verse 3, it's at the end of the line there, after Achav. In verse 4, it's after Avotai. And again, we have a long first part of the verse. In verse 5, it's under Ishto. In 6, under Tachtaiv. And in 7, it's under Yisrael. Okay, so you got all those identified and marked. So that accent mark is called an athnak. Athnak. And like this look, it may mark a lengthened syllable. So typically we're going to find that certain words, their syllables will be lengthened. So like if we'd had lechem at the athnak marker, it would have lengthened to lachem and so on. And it's only certain words will lengthen like that. But lach we'll see often like that. Point number 3. Well, then he gives us some examples of how that lengthening happens. So shamar lengthens to shamar. The patat lengthens to a kametz. Ani, the composite shva lengthens to a kametz. Chali, the composite shva lengthens to a hulam. Lacha lengthens to lach, the shva lengthens to a kametz. Ata, the pata lengthens to a kametz. And ma shimcha changes to ma shmecha. Then he points out number 3, the commonest minor punctuation mark looks like two dots above a letter, above a word. So, for example, in 21:6, above bekesef, and this is called a zakef katon, and sometimes it also has a lengthened vowel. So, you can mark that. Now, why do we want to pay attention to these accent marks? Well, for two reasons. First of all, it shows you which syllable to accent, to stress. And usually that's going to be the last syllable of the word. But sometimes it won't be. And a good instance of that is the beginning of verse 3. Vayomer Navot el Achav. Now the accent there is that diagonal slash under the yod. So it's showing that the accented syllable is the yo. So it's not vayomer, it's vayomer. Vayomer.
Why isn't it the caret?
Because the caret gets used only once.
Only once.
The caret can be used only once in a sentence. Okay. There's only once in a verse. There's only one athna. There's only one saluk together with the sof pasuk, and there's only one athnak. It's a bit like the system works in sort of in a binary fashion. Now, the precise syntactic value of that accent you don't need to particularly care about. But what you do need to begin to pay attention to is which syllable is accented. And basically, over time, you're going to learn. Well, vayomer, oh yes, that's right. It's the second last syllable gets accented there. And you'll say that word often enough because it's one of the most common words in the whole Hebrew Bible that will indeed sink in. And then the second reason for paying attention to these accents is it helps you break the text down into short units to show you how to translate. You know, sort of a bit like how, particularly back in earlier days when people used to write really long sentences in English, and now you're told to write short sentences with no punctuation other than the full stop at the end. But it used to be that you'd write sentences, people would write sentences that went on and on. If you read something from 100 years ago, and with lots of use of commas and semicolons. And what they do is they break the text down into shorter syntactic units. And the accents work the same way. So if you take this other sheet that I handed out you, this Tabula Accentuum, which unfortunately is in a mixture of transliterated Hebrew and Latin. But this is essentially, I prepared a duplicate of the insert that goes in with the Hebrew Bible, and Latin is still sort of considered the language that everybody can read. So it's the table of accents. There are two systems of accents. Point number one says the accentus communis, the common accents, in Libris XXI. So that's in the 21 books. There are 24 books in the Hebrew Bible. 21 of them have one system of accents. And accents are divided into disjunctive and conjunctive accents. So a disjunctive accent marks a little syntactic break from the next word. So a comma is a disjunctive punctuation. Well, in English, all punctuation is disjunctive. Marks a little syntactic break. And then for conjunctive, we don't use punctuation at all. But in Hebrew, every single word has an accent mark on it. And they can be either disjunctive, saying you think of it as being a slight break to the next word, or then conjunctive, meaning syntactically it runs on the next word. And you'll notice the top of the list there is the Saluk Semper Notat Finem verses, and the Latin there reads, always notates the end of a verse, and the end of the verse is marked by the Sof Pasuk, ut in, as in, and then it gives an example for the word davar, what it would look like. Semper is always. Remember the motto of the Marines, Semper Fides, always faithful. Semper notat, notation, notates. Always notates finem, the end of a verse. Advantage of Latin, you can have a good guess at half of it. Athnak, that's the second major disjunctive accent. Not quite as major as the Suluk, but very major. You can think of the Suluk as being a period, the Athnak as being a semicolon. The next one down is the Sugulta, which is the three dots arranged in a triangle. Next one down is the Shalshalat, which looks like a bit of lightning. It's a little difficult to make that out there. Then the two dots, we have the Zakef Parvum, and he calls it the Zakef Katon, but it's a Zakef. And that's about as far as you need to go down. And you don't even need to remember the names of them. Just be able to recognize them. So, for example, and then maybe if we go through verse 1, we have Vayehi Achar Hadavarim Ha'ele. So Ha'ele, we've got those two dots above the Aleph. That's a Zakef. So that's a reasonably major disjunctive accent. So you can draw just a light slash line through the space between after that. Then we have Kerem Hayah Lenavot HaYisraeli Asher BeYisrael. Then we have our Athnak. Eitzel Hekal Achav. We've got those two dots, another Zakef, so another minor pause, and then Melech Shomron. So now, if you were reading this, And again, this is what you will eventually aim for. At the moment, you're still struggling your way through to read through individual words. But for me reading this, I would read Vayihi Achar HaDevarim HaEle. And then I see, oh, I've got a Zakeif. Take us a short pause. Kerem Haya LeNevot HaYisraeli Asher BeYisrael. Major pause. Eitzel Hechal Achav. Then I've got another Zakeif, minor pause. Then Melech Shomron. And then when it comes to translating, and this is where it really becomes useful, I now, basically now I've got the verse divided.